Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration that promotes the French language, heritage, and its numerous cultural expressions. It runs March 3rd to 23rd in communities across Canada. La Fondation canadienne pour le dialogue des cultures, in partnership with the National Campus and Community Radio Association, through the Community Radio Fund of Canada and this station, present the RBF series, January through March of 2016. For more information, check out www.ncra.ca/RBF.
Hello, bienvenue à Les Racontures, a radio project for Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie. My name is Lisa Pruden. And over the next half hour, we will be exploring stories from La Communauté Francophone here in the Edmonton area. So brew up some tea or some hot chocolate and get cozy. We begin with the legend of the flying canoe, La Chasse Galerie.
This is actually a story about some lumberjacks. And basically what it is, it happened in the mid-1800s.
De la France au Québec, le récit est devenu légende. Cette histoire a commencé dans une cabane en bois rond, la veille du jour de l'an, au fond d'une forêt enneigée bien loin du nord de Bytown, qu'on connaît aujourd'hui sous le nom d'Ottawa.
And these poor lumberjacks were stuck in camp over Christmas. And they were, you know, crying the blues with a bit of liquor and stuff. And one of them says, you know, I'd really like to go see my honey for Christmas and at least dance at one of the parties and stuff. And, you know, well, it's 400 kilometers away or miles, so how are we going to do that?
Allez, les hommes s'étaient retrouvés avancés en boisson, le sentiment affaibli par les pensées de leur famille restée en ville. Sans prévenir, Baptiste Durand a lancé, ah, pourquoi qu'on passerait la nuit du jour de l'an dans ce sacré camp alors que chez les Laframboises, on doit déjà être en train de danser le cotillon sur le violon de Philippe la Jeunesse? Il n'y a qu'à prendre le canot, là, le canot caché sous la neige, tout juste à côté du grand sapin centenaire, puis partir en chasse-galerie.
So one of the fellows says, well, he says, we can make a deal with the devil, and he'll bring us on a flying canoe, and we'll get there in less than 2 hours. And these guys are already feeling a little happy, right? Sure, okay, so what's the deal? Well, the deal is, he'll fly us there and back, but we can't mention God's name. And we can't hook any church steeples on the way, you know, with the canoe as you're flying. Oh, well, we can do that. Sure, we can. So off they go with this promise.
Puis un moment après, huit hommes prenaient place. Joe, le cook, à l'avant, en éclaireur Baptiste, à l'arrière, à la gouverne, et trois rameurs se plaçaient de chaque côté, aviron à la main. À Cabris, à Cabras, à Cabram, canot d'Écosse, fais-nous voyager par-dessus les montagnes.
And they have fun. They dance with their sweeties.
Pendant un bon 2 heures, une danse n'attendait pas l'autre. Jig, voleuse, valse réelle. Et la cruche de whisky blanc qui coulait généreusement. Et la demoiselle, je parle de la cruche, se faisait prendre la taille plus souvent qu'une religieuse. Et les danseurs qui devenaient de plus en plus joyeux, les semelles en faisaient du feu, les jupes en frisaient. Ça paraissait que M. le curé n'y était pas là. Mais le temps passait. Joel Cook a jeté un coup d'œil à l'horloge. Plus que 2 heures avant l'aube. Et le chantier, qui était 300 milles de distance, il a fait au signe aux autres de s'acheminer vers la porte.
They're coming back, and the cook happens to have a little too much liquor in him. Starts blathering and swearing, and they said, oh gosh, we're gonna lose our souls, because the deal was we'd lose our soul to the devil if he didn't live up to your deal, right? So they tied him up and they muffled him. And he's fighting all this and he rocks the canoe. And he falls out. And it ends up they all fall out. And they wake up there in the snowbank next to the camp. They don't know how they got there. Their souls were saved. Now, was it a dream? Or did it really happen, right?
L'ont-ils couru ou l'ont-ils rêvé la chasse-galerie?
That's the story of in short version, of the chasse-galerie. Or the flying canoe. It was a deal they made with the devil. Actually, it's about a bunch of drunken lumberjacks.
You tried to lift that canoe over that tall tree, and you guys were so drunk that you just dropped the canoe and you all passed out in the snow, and we had to come and get you a few hours later.
Thanks to Germaine Prebisch and Pierrette Requier for telling the story of La Chasse Galerie. Germaine shared in English and Pierrette shared en français. We will hear more from each of them a little later. Legends and stories are such an integral part of our culture. I spoke with Lynn Penrod to learn more about why that is.
My name is Lynn Penrod, and I've been a professor at the University of Alberta since what seems like forever, since 1977. I'm a professor of French in the Department of Modern Languages and Cultural Studies in the Faculty of Arts. And I first started dealing with children's literature written in French way back in 1983. The importance of children's literature in terms of language and especially culture is that's how we pass our culture down to the next generation. I think we all remember being read to by our parents or our siblings or listening to the librarian read or the teacher read at school and being very eager to learn to read ourselves so that we could read the stories. And before we had the printing press, all stories were told in an oral tradition. So you learned the story, and then you passed it down. And obviously, there'd been a lot of communication back and forth with native people who had already settled the land. And that's where in Quebec and in Acadie and many, many places in North America, the legends and the stories that are told from an oral tradition are a mixture of native myth and legend combined with old stories from France or, if you're in the United States, from England. Things get very, very confusing. But myth and legend and story all come from a very similar source, and that is to try to explain where we came from and how we should behave in the world and what happens to people when they don't behave correctly or when they transgress a rule. And you find from culture to culture those different takes. Those stories tell you something about what a particular culture values, what's going on here. And then when a culture changes or when something changes in a culture, you get people rewriting those stories so that it gets turned upside down. The Chasse-Galerie, that's a really wonderful one because it combines everything. It's funny. It gives a moral to the story. It's human because it's talking about these guys who are out working in the woods and it's going to be New Year's Eve and they want to go home to have a party and see their girlfriends and their wives and they can't make it unless the canoe can fly. And to get the canoe to fly, well, you have to make a pact with the devil. So they make the pact with the devil, the canoe flies, and they're all different versions of this depending on where you are in Quebec or even anywhere in Canada. There are English versions as well. And they're flying along and they land and there's a big party going on. And of course, they drink and drink and drink. They're not going to get back in time. And then the story gets very divergent. Sometimes they get up in the air and they can't ever land. They're like Flying Dutchmen. They're going around and around and around. They can never go down. Sometimes I think they all fall off and land in the snow. It really depends who's telling the story.
I'd like to introduce you to someone. Her name is Germaine Pribysh. For many years, she was the manager and curator at the Bonnyville and District Cultural Museum and is now retired. She is also my great aunt's sister, and we had the chance to meet for the very first time over the phone, where she shared stories from her Francophonie family, especially about her dad, who happened to be a lumberjack.
Well, I'm the third oldest of a family of seven children, and my father started off, he's from a family of 12 to 13 children in Quebec. is where he was raised, and you know they had to do all kinds of jobs early. He started working cleaning out his neighbor's barns and feeding cattle at the age of 12, and eventually he became a lumberjack. At the age of 13, he would go for 6 months at a time or whatever, spend Christmas in the lumber camp, and most of his money would be sent back to help support the family. From there, he became a lumberjack, and opportunity came that he was able to go to Hinton, from Quebec to Hinton, to be a lumberjack, or to cut wood. And so he did that, and eventually he met my mother, and they married, and he had 7 children, and I'm one of the 7. But the traditional Quebec traditions and stuff followed him, and he had a love for music, so most of our family has a great love of music. He would play the accordion. By some of his first money he earned that he could save for himself, he bought himself a little accordion, a button accordion, and he played by ear. And he had it. Yeah, oh yeah. But he played by ear. And he played the spoons and the bones. And
oh, wow. It sounds like it would have been really lovely to spend time with your family, especially perhaps around holidays and gatherings with music happening.
Yes, Christmas was a really special time. He would take out his accordion, but not so much that. If he didn't play music, he listened to it. And he had records, you know, the old LP vinyl type, of old traditional French-Canadian music that had a lot of beat and a lot of things. And some of them are repeating songs or answering songs. Des chansons à répète, as what we call, à répondre, is how we call them. And every Christmas, it wasn't Christmas until we heard that record.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and music, like I say, played a big role in our family. And although my dad is gone, we still play that record every Christmas, if we can, without tearing up. My dad had a favorite story of being in the camps when he was young, and the camps, and this is a true story, they had bunks, you know, it was log houses, or the long log houses, and they slept in there, and they had a wood-burning stove in the middle. And so the guy at the bottom, you know, heat rises. The guy at the bottom was always cold. He kept shoveling more and more wood into the wood-burning stove. And the fellows in the top bunk were just cooking. And when they were in camp, they didn't do any barbering. They didn't shave, and they didn't cut their hair. And so one guy decided to get closer to the wall to get a bit cooler. Well, he woke up, his hair was frozen to the log. He had to cut him out. And that happened in my dad's camp.
I love the image of Germaine's dad waking up to find his bunkmate stuck to the wall of a cabin out in a lumberjack camp in the middle of winter. On the search for more family stories, I sat down with the band Postscript.
We're a bilingual indie folk trio from here in Edmonton. We've been playing for about, I guess, 3 years now, and we just released our new album, If Not For You, in October.
I had first met Paul, Steph, and Brayden at Le Café Bicyclette.
We were sharing some maybe family stories or little histories.
Yeah, we were.
I might have been rambling on.
Grandpa Cornet.
I don't know that you were rambling so much as getting into something interesting.
Oh, it's how my great-grandfather ended up in Morinville.
Yeah.
That was
the story.
Totally. That's the one.
Do you want me to recount this beautiful tale for you?
I do.
I would love that. I think
sure.
That would
grab a blanket. Get cozy.
Get cozy.
Story time with Paul.
Good evening. Okay. Story time voice is on. Back at the turn of the century here in good old Edmonton, my great-grandfather was hanging out on Jasper Avenue and, I don't know, doing whatever people did back then. And there was news that there had been a train derailment into the Sturgeon River in St. Albert. And so people just went and checked out crashes back in the day, I guess. So a bunch of people on Jasper Ave all decided to hop on the streetcar because there was one that ran all the way to St. Albert. They made their way down there, and then he ended up running into an acquaintance from Quebec, and from the town he was born. He happened to own a barber shop in Morinville. He wanted to sell it, and my great-grandfather had just arrived, and he, I guess, was an enterprising lad and decided that he would go for it, and ended up buying a barber shop in Mournville and running that, and that spawned into a pool hall and the first Ford dealership and a bunch of other interesting things. Who would have thought that a little train derailment would lead up to that? I think that was what always. That's why I was trying to tell that story.
For sure.
Well, I come from a gigantic Franco-Albertan family. I think it might be one of the biggest ones in Alberta, honestly. My last name is Blay, so it's the Blay family. And my dad grew up with 9 siblings, so they're a family of 10 siblings. And, I don't know. Things are always kind of crazy. It's always nice to go to my grandma's house and be surrounded by so many people. Christmas Eve, we have a family tradition. Well, it's very common. It's called Réveillon. So the point of that evening is pretty much to celebrate with your family, and pretty much the party starts at midnight, and then you go on till all morning pretty much to get to your house at around 6 a.m. So that's what we do on Christmas Eve. But yeah, it's just I've always been surrounded by a lot of people. My grandpa would always, he had this harmonica that, like, no one else could use. It was, like, his, and you, like, wouldn't be able to touch it, or else you'd get mad. And he'd always, like, pull it out during, like, family gatherings and play random little songs, and everyone would start singing. And when you get about, I don't know, 80 people singing together, it's always pretty great. So that's the same thing on Christmas Eve. We usually did that when he was around, and we'd sing, like, different French Christmas songs, like the same ones in English but in French, and spend hours just singing with him. And it was kind of, I think we all enjoyed that moment because it would happen every year, so you'd always know that it would happen. And I'd always bring my guitar because I was like, oh, we're definitely going to be singing some Christmas carols tonight. So I don't know. We always have like those little things that all the families have, those little memories that we try to continue on. So I think music has always been a very present thing for our family. So yeah,
that's really awesome. Mm-hmm. And that would be a really special thing to have 80 of your family members.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. Well, I have 46 first cousins.
Oh my God.
So if you just think of that, 46 first cousins. And I think we were probably around 25 second cousins, so just like little babies. Whoa. Hanging around the family. So I think the oldest cousin is 38, and the youngest is my little sister, and she's 7. So it's pretty amazing, extremely lucky to have that many people around.
Absolutely.
Around me. And yeah, it's I always forget about how truly lucky I am to have such a big family. So,
so yourself, Braden, you don't have Francophonie roots, right?
No, none whatsoever. I describe myself as a fakeophone. as I sing in French and play in a couple French bands, and people after the shows begin to talk to me in French, and I'm like, hey man, sorry,
I don't actually
Je
know
suis
what
désolé. I remember when I was 7, I was really itching to get into a French immersion school, but I didn't want to leave my friends, so that never happened. And then I moved to Edmonton, and I met up with Paul in school, and we started up or rather, I should say, I joined. Paul had a kind of a Francophone indie rock project, and so I joined that, and we started jamming from there. And then I loved Foolscript so much, so every time I would go to a show of theirs, I was kind of like, "Hey, you guys, like, we should jam sometime." You know, what's going on? So I kind of slyly—that's a word—joined the band. I do sing in French, although most of the time I don't understand what I'm saying, but yes.
Do you feel like you're learning a lot as you go?
I do. I've learned a lot through these two people, and kind of somewhat joined the Francophone community in Edmonton too, which I would have no idea that it existed. But so it's a truly interesting cultural insight.
Well, that's good. That brings me to another question, which is how do you guys find the Francophonie community here in Edmonton?
Well, I know my Blay first family is basically
that's so true. Oh my god, that's hilarious.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. It's very true. Well, growing up in Bonnie Doon, that's the official French quarters, you know everyone. So even going, I go to Café Bicyclette like minimum twice a week, like minimum. I was there today even. But it's great. It's a great community to be a part of, and very supportive, especially music-wise. People are always asking questions and, you know, wanting to hear what else we've got going on and things like that. So very supportive and vibrant, and they always have a lot of things going on, even in l'Est francophone. So if you're bored one day, usually on Sundays they have a market there now, and it's great, a farmer's market, and just going to the cafe and being able to, like, hear some French too. It's, I don't know, it's always nice, like, whip up your one phrase you know how to say in French and just go to the cafe and say it. Like, you know, it's just, I think everyone's very accepting, mm-hmm. and they really like the Anglophones, the outsiders, to come in and to hang out and to join and see what we do and totally. What our community is really about. So yeah.
It is true, actually, because when I was there, when I first met you there, that was my very first time at the Café Bicyclette, and I was a little bit intimidated and terrified to go, and it was so welcoming.
Yeah.
And
very
everybody
welcome.
Was very patient with my attempts at French when I attempted.
Nice.
Very welcoming. It was a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, definitely. Very welcoming. So
it's not as otherworldly as you may think. It's pretty run-of-the-mill Albertan, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Just sometimes people talk in French.
That's right.
That was Paul Cornier, Steph Blay, and Braden Treble from the band Postscript. Now we take a look at the importance of language in storytelling. Pierrette Harquier is Edmonton's 6th Poet Laureate.
Yes, I am, and I'm happy to be.
You'll recognize her voice as well from the beginning of the show. She shared the story of the flying canoe in French. She joined me to speak about her passion for bilingualism.
I really loved reading about how you recognized when your language was being stifled and pushed back against that.
That's right. That's right. At one point, I became aware that my mother tongue, which I call in French la langue de mon cœur, the language of my heart, did not have quite enough room in my life. And being a Western Canadian, I would have to do something about it. It was my responsibility to cultivate it. And so I affiliated with the Francophone community. I joined RAFA, which is Regroupement Artistique Francophone de l'Alberta. And it's an organization that supports artists in Alberta, Francophone artists, and of course encourages us to become visible with our art. And of necessity, we perform and create things in both languages because we want the greater public to see, hear, listen, to be happy to have us around. Yeah. Well, I think the most wonderful surprise of my life that happened after I decided to take responsibility to cultivate my mother tongue was that when I decided that at every place where I would perform or read or present, I would do half in French. And people were delighted. And the other thing that happened is that a number of other people who had other languages started performing in both languages. And also when I was translating some of my poetry from my collection of poetry details from the edge of the village from English to French, I realized that there are some English words that I'm so fond of that I didn't translate them because that's the word that says exactly what I want to say. And if you read my book, Details from the Edge of the Village, you're going to see French words in the poems. And I could not use any other word because that's the word that wanted to express what needed to be said. So that's where I found out that I'm truly, truly bilingual. Like, I need both languages.
And much to my delight, Pierrette brought in a poem to share.
So I'll read it in English and then I'll read it in French. Patinoire on a small pond by our house on the other side of the tracks. My big brother pulled me patiently, gently at the end of his black taped hockey stick until my wobbly legs held and my small black skates glided jaggedly. And later on at the village's open air rink, I learned to make smoother circles, mastered the art of skating backwards. Then, when I was old enough to go out alone with two pairs of woolen socks stuffed in my hand-me-down fancy skates, draped over my skinny shoulders, I walk over to La Patinoire after doing the supper dishes. And a few steps into the prairie night, I can already hear the cold cluck of the puck, the slap shots, the scratch of blades on ice gouging the surface as guys practice hockey, stop, change directions fast, thud each other's boy bodies sur les bandes, rattle hockey sticks with click, 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 insistent shouts, over here, over here. Then comes what I love best, free skating and the great arena of the sky over the oval space of the rink and the fresh air and the smell of wood smoke, and how, on snowy nights, as I lay on the ice, I get swallowed up by the deep, dark blue as the fluffy, falling flakes spin, slow motion, waft me up, 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 make me the star. Et en français, patinoire. Sur la petite pond, derrière notre maison, l'autre bord de la traque, c'est là que mon grand frère me montre à patiner. Accroché à deux mains au bout de son hockey stick tapé noir, patinant de reculons, lentement, il me guide jusqu'à ce que mes jambes tremblotantes restent stédées sur mes patins, puis même que je zigzague, j'ose glisser seul, et plus tard j'arrive à faire des cercles, à patiner de reculons, comme lui, puis quand j'ai la permission de marcher toute seule jusqu'au skating rink après la vaisselle du souper, mes hand-me-down fancy skates accrochés aux épaules, à quelques pas dans le noir, j'entends déjà les slap shots des grands gars, le clic-clic-clic de leurs hockey sticks, leur over here, leurs arrêts, soudain de leurs patins, toujours bien affilés, gouger la surface lisse de la glace. Les coups de leur corps se butent contre les bandes, puis, après la pratique, c'est l'heure du free skating, dans mon aréna, à moi, puis dans le silence et l'encens de la boucane du poêle à bois, dessous la coupole du grand ciel bleu nuit, quand les gros flocons tournoient, 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 je me couche sur la glace, je me laisse emporter, je deviens la star, l'étoile du soir.
The stories we tell are special. Whether we are sharing tales around a fire or sharing our memories, our stories shape us and guide us. They help us see into the heart of each other. We have reached the end of our show. A very big thanks to Lynn Penrod, Germaine Pribish, Pierrette Kier, and to Paul, Steph, and Braden from Postscript. The music you heard on this show is titled Boop and was created by Poddington Bear. This has been Les Racontures, a show about storytelling in Edmonton's Francophone community. Merci. Thank you for listening.
For more information on the Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, which is an annual celebration in partnership with La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Campus and Community Radio Association, Community Radio Fund of Canada, and this station, visit www.ncra.ca/RVF.